5 o'clock today, to Frederick's too. It's about the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, it's 6 o'clock. Let's roll along here. Not early. Looks like, yeah.
So if they run something dirty before it.
Tim, the only person that's contacted me was Warren, that he wasn't going to be here today. Who else is?
Well, Warren is on the phone. He's on speaker.
Oh, okay.
Warren is represented by this triangular black speaker over here.
Good.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
All right.
Hi, Warren.
Hi, Warren.
So Warren's present.
Hello.
There we go.
And Simone and Tim are both excused. They gave notification they were. Wouldn't be able to be here.
Okay.
So it's just Jason that we haven't heard from.
Alright.
Okay. I looked over the minutes. It looked like the meeting I missed went on and on and on and was pretty busy. Is there any discussion or comments about the minutes, or shall we have a motion to approve them as passed?
I just wanted to thank SWAC for that discussion. That was for me to watch and be part of that discussion, and I think the outcome was a great outcome. So I just wanted to thank SWAC for being present and engaging in that conversation. It was exactly what SWAC is intended to do, and hopefully we continue to have conversations like that in the future. So I just wanted to share that. Those are not minutes related. I just didn't know what else to share. So
yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Steve, for standing in there.
Yep.
Motion to approve the minutes then?
So moved.
Second. Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. We'll pass the minutes then. We have updates coming from Public Health on the solid waste program.
Yeah, so we have sort of a light agenda today. I've got a list of updates. We don't have, unfortunately, a lot of discussion today, but that does hopefully mean we get a little bit more sunshine later on for everybody who plans. So I'm going to go down our overall updates, and we've got some things I'll touch on later. So I'll go through our programs from an operations standpoint. Mike is currently in the midst of negotiating a contract with a selected vendor for the regional system study, which is again that big study that looks at our fiscal capital and layout of our solid waste system and helps us build a 20-year plan and then any subsequent improvements that need to be made to our system. Tim Kraft, who is not here but is a former engineer, currently recently retired but for some reason still working as a civil engineer, participated in our selection committee for that vendor, for that regional system study contractor, along with the City of Vancouver, and part of our team worked with selecting that vendor. So I don't think I'm allowed to say who it is until the contract is signed, but we'll be working with them. Contract should be signed very soon, and we should get rolling on that. Then the SWAC will get more regular updates. I will be posting on Monday of next week what I'm calling a special waste project position. That position will be in the operations. It will be akin to Mike and Kim's position, working in the operations and the behind-the-scenes work around what we deem special wastes, which will be taking on the role of coordinating and evaluating improving programs related to paint, household hazardous waste, small quantity generators of hazardous waste, construction and demolition debris, asbestos, and I think we use the term other universal wastes. And the idea is to kind of house all of these programs under one person's review. It's a two-year project position, and their job is to make sure that we're doing everything that we can and should be doing, and that the things we are doing are working towards mitigating all of those wastes. So that position will be announced, and hopefully by our next SWAC meeting I will be able to introduce that person as well as the approach that we're going to want to take. So we'll be prioritizing those wastes. They'll also be taking on the events. If we have what events we have around collecting special wastes, they will take on that role. So that position will hopefully post on Monday. If you know anybody that is keen on special waste and most likely doing things around construction and demolition and hazardous waste, that would be an interesting one to share with people. But again, it's a two-year project position, so we have approval from council, but probably not likely that we would get it extended past that 2 years, at least with the current situation. I'll leave the residue study. Kim will talk about the residue study and the Ridgefield cleanup events, and the block farm contract. Do you want to talk about those three things real quick?
Yeah, so we, as you know, we used to do the mobile collection events throughout the county, and gradually those have been tapering down and farther down. And now it's really just whatever cities are doing an event on their own, and we partner with them to make sure that there's diversion strategies happening or options. This year, Yakult decided that they did not want to do that, so we didn't go, we're not planning to go out to Yakult. We have talked to them about maybe doing just a hazardous waste collection, since it's not near a hazardous waste facility there. And they, I was told they were going to bring that to their council, but I haven't heard back. So I'm going to check in again here soon, but we're thinking maybe to do it like in fall. So it's enough time away from when the event would normally be, so people don't show up with all the other things. But we did just have the Ridgefield event on the 20th last month in April. And let's see, about 326 people came through.
Where was it held?
In Ridgefield by like Par Lumber and Fish and Wildlife, that like really long road.
Yep, I know where that is.
Yeah.
Yep.
So the most popular thing was scrap metal, like usual, and electronics. And what we did new this year was at these events, typically, there's materials that are kind of like, oh, you're gonna throw that away, I'm gonna set it aside. Like whoever's just right there unloading. And like, this is something like I want to bring home. So like last year I brought home like a good power washer and pull-up bar. I was like, yeah, might as well divert it. So this year we thought we'd be a little bit more, do more of a, like a actual strategy or system. And we sent volunteers up to every garbage truck. And their whole job was to spot any items that could be reused and donated. And then retail's thrift store came at the end of the day and picked all that stuff up. And so we filled up an entire truck full of reusable items that would have been thrown in the garbage at the event. So really cool. And it went really well. And retail's is really happy. So, yay! We will be doing our residue study. This is our study of the contamination that is in our recycling stream. So, and we'll be able to break that down into what contaminants are ending up. And that's going to be going on later this month. So that'll be really exciting. And once we get the results, I'll share them with you all and kind of compare that to the prior years and see where we're at. And then I also wanted to bring attention to that our right now we have a contract with the Columbia Resource Company to collect block foam at Central Transfer Station for free for residents, and that contract is expiring at the end of September, and it's not our intention to continue that contract. Waste Connections will soon be, if they haven't already, offering block foam collection at all of the transfer stations for commercial at the $5 per yard rate. So our thought was that we would let this contract expire, and then residents would then start to have to pay that $5 per yard, $250 minimum charge. So I wanted to tell you that and then see if there's any discussion about that or concerns or anything.
Has it been widely utilized?
Yeah, we fill up a good semi, you know, truck trailer every week at Central.
Which condenses down about this much.
Yeah.
More than that.
I think they showed it condensing to like a pallet size. This is what happens. Here's Jason.
So that foam, once it's taken away, it can be used still.
Yeah, so they recycle it. So all the foam that's collected at Central Transfer Station that residents drop off and commercial, it goes over to Tigard, to Agilex, and they turn it into a styrene monomer, which can be used in the same applications as like virgin petroleum styrene, which is a really cool process. It's like, it's not downcycling, it's like that styrofoam that's turning back into styrofoam. So it's really cool.
Just like the red cup.
Yeah, they'll take the red cup too over there in Agilex.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I don't know if there was any concerns about that. Our kind of intention is that this is a program, and we want to encourage residents to try to not come with just that one meat tray or, you know, to the transfer station, and also to try to, you know, put pushback on the manufacturers that are creating this black foam, you know, and not make it too easy. I know we've talked about that, like sometimes we make things too easy, you know, for residents, and really we want to look at waste reduction strategies and how do you create behaviors or make, you know, create that behavior change in order to not force, but cause that reduction in waste. So
if they deposit black foam, they're going to be charged?
Yeah, at the $5 per yard rate. And right now, it's been free at just Central. Has it opened up at Washougal?
Yes, we opened it up at Washougal and West Bend.
Okay, and And then starting in October, when our contract expires, residents would then pay the same rate as the commercial rate. Yeah.
Are you getting any reaction to people being charged?
Well, we haven't started charging yet.
You haven't started charging now.
The only thing we have to note is we've had the commercial program available, and it's been available for about a year, and it's a similar pricing model. We've had three customers in a year. One was, I think, the city of Vancouver brought some material in, the city of Camas brought some material in, and we had one other customer. So we don't know, once you start paying for it, people are interested or not, it'll be kind of a test case.
Okay.
But it does need to be funded in some fashion, essentially a tip fee.
So, right.
And we don't try to make money on it, we're just trying to cover our costs on it.
Yeah. So, my question would be, so when do you think we would start charging people?
When the contract ends.
So it ends in September.
Yeah, so it'd be October 1st.
So we wouldn't know until after our August meeting what the response is.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll be patient.
Okay.
That's good, but I think people will still use it. I mean, it's a nominal fee, and most people don't bring in over a yard. So I think we're paying $2.50. We might have been even amount to make it easier, it's just some people's quarters and all that stuff. But I think it'll be fine.
Okay. Thank you for your input. you want to talk about, I have other little things to recommend for you.
The Green Neighbors program, I'll go through just some bigger updates and some upcoming events for our Green program. So Green Neighbors, we're currently recruiting for our environmental outreach specialist position. We got quite a few applications.
Yeah.
And quite a few qualified candidates, so we're sifting through the applications right now. Hopefully we'll start interviewing in a couple of weeks. I think our timeline is to have that position start in July, and that's kind of our realistic timeline. So, depending on how quickly those interviews go and how successful we are.
You will be quiet. Don't listen to twins.
Any more?
You.
Sorry, guys.
And then, the big event coming up for the Green Neighbors program is the Recycled Arts Festival, which is coming up June 29th and 30th. If anybody is interested in volunteering, I believe we're still looking for volunteers. And we can send out a link to that website to volunteer, or you can post on your social medias, your social media outlets, your Facebooks, your Twitters, your all of those doodads. You can send them out to all of your buddies and get some people to volunteer, or at least make them aware that the event is coming up. We have very great attendance from visitors and participation, but also need a strong core of volunteers to do that work. So,
what were the dates?
That is June 29th and June 30th. In the Green Business Program, I know that the one highlight that made the newspaper since we last met is that we certified as a green business our first marijuana dispensary here in Vancouver. So a green business is the pun that is going around the office. So. And actually out of that, because that was a high profile business that people recognized, Sarah actually received two restaurants connected to that, restaurants that are looking to become certified green businesses in the county, including Brick House Tavern, and I can't remember what the other one was, but So we have our first green dispensary, certified green business pot dispensary. We most recently had the Green Awards, and I believe there are about 170 people that attended that. Our Green Awards recognizes people in all of our green programs or parties or businesses or organizations in all of our green programs that have done above and beyond in the last year to implement sustainable practices in their lives or their businesses. And we had actually a, I don't know if anybody attended, I know Rich did, Jason did.
I was there.
You were there?
I
thought a very entertaining.
I went to the green business thing when it was at the Hub.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, Sarah said you mentioned that. Yeah, Sarah said you had been there. So we had an improv troupe do the narrating, and I found it to be very, very entertaining, including a skit where they mock. They, I don't know what it's called, but they acted out going through their neighbor's recycling and garbage to find stuff. I thought it was a good take on our business. So yeah, I thought it was a success. I thought it was a great event. So thank you to everybody that came. Thank you to anybody that will come next year. Also, the morning blend is at BioClean. I don't have an address for that, but it is at BioClean on May 16th, so that's coming up in a couple of weeks. Our Green Schools program, I don't have any upcoming events for them. I know that they're continuing on implementing a few milk dispensers at some of the schools. The school year is winding down. I think now it's more about conversations about how do we implement something in the summertime to have kids start up on day one with new milk dispensers at school or to roll them out early in the year. So I don't think we'll be implementing any new ones. And I wasn't able, there was a first aid class today, and I hope to get some numbers from Michelle. But I haven't seen the most updated school, but I believe that we have six different schools that are currently participating, and two more that want to participate. So that we'll be winding up the pilot for that, kind of evaluating what we want to do moving forward. It's an expensive and time-consuming process, and I think we want to evaluate what the value of the process is. So once it's all done, that would be a good presentation to have Michelle come back here and speak to this, the conclusion of that project, and kind of get some feedback moving forward. Master Composter Recycler, they had their volunteer or their graduation for their volunteers recently. Again, it was a very large class, and they've started in on their composting or their workshop series. So they have backyard composting on the 4th, vermicomposting on the 8th. Raised bed composting or lasagna gardening on the 18th, and a green cleaning workshop on the 22nd. And they're also going to be working on developing a composting demonstration site at Pacific Park. We already have a composting demonstration site at the Casey Center out towards Brush Prairie Battleground and at the Heritage Farm location in Hazeldale. So that will be just demonstrating different types of composting that people can do on site, as well as a place to teach classes. Those are all of my programmatic, those are all of my updates for the county. We have a few things we'll talk about later. But.
Yeah, I just have a few quick things. I sent out an email about the Dirt Hugger Tour. So just a reminder, if you want to go, to email Austin. It's on May 9th from 8 a.m. to 3:30, and I believe they're meeting at the City of Vancouver Engineering Building by the Water Resource Center. As you know, we're now, I sent an email informing everybody that Chris had resigned from his position representing the Southwest community, and we are actively recruiting that position. So far, I have not received any applications. They're due on the 10th. And again, it's Southwest Clark County, so up toward to 179th and to the east until 503 or 117 area. And that can include people that live in the city of Vancouver, so there's no. And then I wanted to also, Rich's position representing the city of Vancouver expires in July, so we have to open it up to everyone every time. So I'll do the normal process of putting out a press release and everything for that. I haven't talked to you yet, so I'm sorry.
although it is the City of Vancouver position, so I think the City Council and the City Manager kind of appoint the position.
That's correct. Yeah, that's right.
I don't know. You were here when I started.
I mean,
sounds like the attorney general thing.
Yeah. I think, yeah. I think we need a public,
Yeah, we probably,
Can we get a report?
I think, yes.
Sorry.
I can get a four-page summary.
Thank you for reminding me that. I just noticed...
Because it's a government
position. The thing today, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, yeah, normally it would be a city council person. So, if they still would like to appoint.
Let me check with the city manager and see what they want to do.
Okay. That would be great. Thank you. And then do sign in if you didn't sign in today. It's really important to sign in. And that's it. Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you. This sounds like there's a lot of stuff going on anyway. I enjoyed the business coffee. And that was the day after I got back to Vancouver area. The coffee deal was at the Hub, which is an urban brewery out in the East Vancouver.
Get coffee there?
Coffee and
brewery. Yes, yeah, we had good coffee.
I didn't know they did that.
They have a full restaurant, everything there, and it's a delightful. And the owner has I think three, and he's building a fourth brewery in the place to go and drink your beer. He was quite loquacious and able to, deal with sustainability, and he took us. It was a long presentation. He took us from the Romans, at least, drinking beer up till the present. So that was good. I noticed in some things that I've got that there's a repair it on 4 May, which is like day after tomorrow, Saturday, I guess, at Cascade Park Library from noon to two. So if you have a broken toaster or something that you can't fix, they'll have their gurus there that can fix almost anything. And that's at the Cascade Park Library from noon to 2, just a couple hours, I guess, on Saturday. Let's see, anything else I had? Oh, the other thing is, where I am in Mesa, Arizona, I'm on the Green Committee for the park that I'm in, and we had a visit or a field trip to the hazardous waste collection that they do in Mesa, and it was very interesting. It's residential drop-off primarily, and not for businesses, but it was interesting. People would drop off all kinds of stuff, and then you can go pick it up. There's half a container of weed killer. If you want some weed killer, you can just go there and help yourself. And same thing, you can have all the paint you want. It comes out kind of like a tan, which is a good color for the desert. And they have 5-gallon cans, all you want. You just stop by and they'll put it in the trunk for you. So I thought that was interesting. Okay, continuing on. Solid waste enforcement.
Hello. I know there's some of you I haven't met or talked much with. Chuck Harmon, program manager here in public health. For most of my 4 years here, since March, I've been managing several programs: on-site septic, drinking water protection, solid waste enforcement, hazardous assessment, and local source control programs. We recognized not too long ago that we needed to make sure those programs and the staff in those programs got the attention they needed. We started the process last fall to bring on another manager into the environmental public health group. So right now, that's myself, the food program manager, Bridget Bashaw, this is named Travis, Fisher, program coordinator. He's now blocked from me by a partition wall, so I don't see him all the time anymore. But anyway, the new person that we just brought in, who will be taking on solid waste enforcement, hazardous assessment, and local source control, his name is Brian Schlottman. He is previously joining us from the city of Hillsboro, where he worked in Parks and Recreation there.
I don't know, I didn't listen during the interview, so I don't really...
Yeah, I know.
And we'd like to
welcome him now. I can't say this. We had no rule Travis on certain things. But anyway, I think Brian's going to be great. He's been here about 2.5 weeks, getting to know the staff, getting to know the program. But luckily, Greg's here today, so we got a chance for Greg to meet him. Greg Kuchowski from Ecology. Unfortunately, Brian was not able to make it here tonight. He had a family obligation. But he will be at the next SWAC meeting. We'll make him go no matter what.
Yeah, this first absence is going on his record.
That's a merit. And there'll be some time frame for us to transition, because we're going to just throw him into the tiger pit, as it were. I don't know if I'll make it to future SWAC meetings or not. We'll have to see. There's really interesting, enticing reasons. But anyway, unfortunately, Brian couldn't be here, but I think it's going to be good. And I think you went out to some facilities with Melissa today also, and met with Waste Connection. So that's my news at the program manager level. And then Melissa has a few things to update on some facilities and things like that. Facilities and some of our interesting cases that we've been doing.
Hi, Melissa.
Solid
Waste Enforcement. I'll try not to talk as long as I did last meeting. I put together a smaller presentation than the last meeting. Last meeting, we talked a lot about Section 30. We didn't get to do the 2018 review. So I did want to just give you some just quick numbers. Last year, we had 186 complaints received to our department for solid waste complaints only, and we resolved 175 last year. I performed 60 solid waste handling facility inspections. 48 were our permitted facilities and 12 of them as our exempt facilities. Our permitted facilities we inspect quarterly, and we do annual inspections for our exempt facilities. And we received 4 permit applications, 1 for a permitted facility and then 3 exempt facilities. So just kind of a quick, you get the quarterly, so I just wanted to give you a quick overview. For Q1, we received 42 complaints and resolved 45. So we had some that we didn't get last year that we were able to close up this year. We did 13 facility inspections. The number's a little bit higher because I went out to Section 30 twice. I included them in as a permitted facility just because they had submitted their application and were in process. And then the applications, the permit applications, they're all, they seem to be in all phases of approval. So we had the 1 permitted facility and then 3 exempt facilities, including Paper People, Earth Friendly, and then Watley Tent, which we identified a need and we've had meetings, and so that'll be a next slide.
Can you real quickly remind me what an exempt facility is versus a permitted facility?
So the regulations require a solid waste handling permit for certain aspects of solid waste handling. So like our transfer stations, for example, have a permit, our closed facilities have a permit. There are other solid waste handling that require a notification of exemption. So they send a notification to Department of Ecology and Public Health. We review it, make sure they meet land use zoning, air quality requirements, kind of the general high level basics. They do annual reporting to us and we inspect them annually, but what they're doing is kind of less risk, so kind of thinking of it that way. So they don't pay us a permit fee. They're doing things like, places like City Bark, who accept yard debris from the public, or EH Metals, who accepts metal from the public, or they're doing recycling or piles. Those kinds of facilities are exempt from permit, but not exempt from regulation. If you have piles that have less than a certain volume, sometimes you don't even need to notify Ecology and you're just exempt, not conditionally exempt.
Thank you.
Yes.
If there's a facility that accepts yard wastes, right,
mm-hmm.
How can they be exempt?
So it's exempt from permit. So they don't pay us a solid waste handling permit, and they don't have the terms and conditions of our permit. They still have to track the volumes. They still have to report to ecology. In some cases, they have to do testing of the material and submit that for review. But it just doesn't, they don't pay us a permit fee. They've been deemed as conditionally exempt. It's to encourage and promote businesses to do recycling, reuse, and instead of landfilling and disposal.
They must be fairly small facilities.
Yeah, so it's under regulation, but it's not, but they just don't pay us a permit fee. So part of that effort and work is to get the grant from Washington State Department of Ecology. In that partnership, we work together for those. So it offsets that permit fee for the department.
Do you inspect that huge shredder that's across from the depot?
I do not inspect. I have been out to that site in the past and with Department of Ecology staff. They are heavily regulated by Washington State Department of Ecology through their industrial permitting process. So a lot of the permitting that we would oversee is duplicative and overlapping, and it was determined in 2007 when I had gone out there with Anya Cottle that was best to continue under the regulatory oversight of Department of Ecology rather than at a local level.
Now, do you get a report from them then?
I do not, no.
That seems like something you should get. You know, no. Without being able to do it physically, then you should see what they're doing on paper.
Yeah, I don't get a copy of their reporting. They have a business permit through the City of Vancouver that they do some permitting with as a solid waste entity, and then their solid waste managing practices are all processed through Department of Ecology.
Thank you.
Yeah. So just a quick update on the Section 30 materials. After our last SWAC meeting, Public Health issued a stop work order with the terms and conditions that you guys put forth. So thank you, Rich, for putting together the thoughtful response, and to all of SWAC for your input. It was really a great opportunity to see government in action and see public comments be heard and have that be vetted in the appropriate format. So I appreciate your comments and your feedback. So we've issued the stop work order on the 11th. On the 15th, public health staff met with Tappany to develop a compliance plan. They actually stopped accepting materials on the 11th following the SWAC meeting. They knew that was coming, so they took preemptive efforts. On March the 6th, they formally sent us a notice that they were officially withdrawing their application. So they are not electing to pursue a solid waste permit at that location. On the 8th, I went out and did a compliance verification just to ensure that they had stopped accepting materials and kind of get an inventory of what was going on out there. On the 11th, we did a follow-up letter following my inspection with what our expectations were for that material. And on the 27th, on the 25th of March, they notified us that the mulch pile was going to be scheduled to be moved off off-site to a project that they had designated. So I went out on the 27th to verify that, and the mulch and wood chip pile was significantly reduced. Their compost pile is finished compost. It has been tested. According to the regulations, it can remain off pad provided that they have stormwater protection such as a cover or a berm. A lot of wood chips that they had in place have been bermed around their compost pile conveniently. But it is a berm and does meet the requirements of the statute, and the pile is covered. In our communication we sent to them on March 11th, we asked for monthly updates. So I did send them I sent them an email on the 12th. I'm still waiting for your update. I'm ready for your update. And so on Monday this week, we received an official update from Tappany. So we have Slack. I really need to give them some updates. So they did let us know that the compost piles are continuing to remain covered, and they did provide pictures documenting that. They did ask if the piles could be uncovered. They're concerned that with the warmer weather and with it being dry, having the cover may compromise the integrity of the compost. So I advised them that if they wanted to present a plan to public health, that we would be happy to review that with Department of Ecology and City of Vancouver stormwater folks to ensure that stormwater is protected. And if all parties are satisfied, I'm open to reviewing that and potentially approving that. But at this time, I have nothing to review, so I don't want to just say, oh, sure, take it off. So we're working with them, continuing on that for the compliance schedule.
Any problem with fire? Because, you know, it gets hot in there.
Yeah.
You know,
they're supposed to be monitoring for moisture content in the pile as well as the temperature. So they're supposed to be monitoring that. If it needs to be rotated due to temperature, that's on them. The material has been tested. It is stable. It does meet the requirements of Washington Administrative Code 173-350-220. And so it should, it's biological, so it's always continuing to break down, and to say that it's not possible is not realistic, but that part of their parameters is that they're to be monitoring those temperatures and the moisture content. They did advise that the moisture contents have varied. It was at a low of 27% in October, and when they tested in March, was 51%, and they're to keep it below 60%, so it's within that range. They've removed or sold 1,026 cubic yards of compost, 2,000 cubic yards of mulch, and they said half of the habitat logs have been removed. There's still quite a few out there. I am not the best judge of cubic yardage, so I don't have an exact number other than half. We are working with Department of Ecology. If it is under 250 cubic yards, they are exempt from all the regulations. They don't have to do notification or reporting or anything. It's just completely exempt. If it is 251 or more, then they would need to apply for the notice of intent for the storage of that on site. There's been questions and concerns. They have concrete and asphalt on the property that they're keeping as piles that they're integrating in other projects. And we've been working with the sand and gravel folks at Ecology, and they have confirmed that that material is covered under the sand and gravel permit, so it would not require solid waste permitting. So we're deferring that to the sand and gravel. Any questions? Yes.
Does it look like Tappany is just kind of trying to get out of that business?
At this location, yes.
Okay.
They felt that it was in the best interest to, you know, based on the feedback from SWAC and also based on the community feedback, they felt that it was in the best interest for their business needs and their business model to not pursue the composting activity. They are interested in potentially pursuing it in the future, maybe at a different site or a different location. But I don't have any plans or sites or anything formal submitted at this time.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I got too impatient, sorry. Thinking. So the Wetley Pit Decamp Facility is a permitted solid waste facility. It has two separate parcels. One parcel is where the decant street sweeping materials go. I inspect it quarterly. They are permitted in good standing. They test the material. And historically, when I've gone out a couple times, probably about 2 or 3 years ago, I would go out and there'd be random piles of shrubbery and piles of yard debris. from various park public works projects, cleaning out parks, cleaning out different areas. So I worked, Greg Ganson is here with Public Works. So he is the operator who oversees Whatley Pit Decamp Facility. They also have on the same location, it is a land reclamation pit. So just like Section 30, I've gotten to know and love DNR staff through this project and trying to find out what's going on. But in our prior communication, where they were having piles long-term, we ended up deciding that it was in the best interest just to stop having that, you know, stop that material from coming in, take it to an H&H or Waste Connections for processing of that material rather than expanding the permit or going through a notice of intent for that material. Some of it was staying on site for in piles longer than the 90-day requirement that was allowed. When I was doing my February inspection, I just kind of usually drive by there just to make sure that everything is copacetic and working like it should. And while I was there, I was like, oh wow, things look great. And then this truck pulled up with a little bit of yard debris in it. I was like, huh, that's odd. And then I watched him as the bed of the truck creaked up. I was like, oh. So I got his contact information. I called Greg. Greg's like, no, they're not supposed to dump that there. And I was like, oh good, that's what I told him. So come to find out, he's like, I was just doing what I said, what I was told to do. And come to find out, when I went to look at the yard debris pile, I see this, all of this dirt that's on the edge of this ravine, and it's just like falling into the ravine, like it's this massive landfill into a ravine. I was like, wow, that doesn't really look right. So I contacted Department of Ecology, contacted DNR staff, contacted Greg. He got me also in touch with a bunch of people at Public Works. we've been meeting and trying to develop a plan. We went out on March the 20th with Public Health, Ecology, DNR, and Public Works staff. Ecology's toxics program collected some samples. The results were supposed to be back within 30 days, and as of today, they are still not available. So, kind of subsequently, Greg did collect some samples and have them run at a separate lab under their own dollar, and we've reviewed that data compared to the MACA level A for use, and it seems to be good, so that's promising. But we're waiting to hear back from Ecology to get that formal report of what those numbers look like from their results to make sure that we're comparing apples to apples. We're literally at 4:30 today. we're kind of in a conundrum of what kind of the next steps would be, whether they would apply for a notice of intent for a solid waste exemption for the piles to kind of have material, because they still have materials that they're getting from road ditches, from swale cleanings, from road shouldering and various road projects. And they're wanting to know what to do with that material. But we have to ensure from Public Health and Department of Ecology that that material is actually clean soil, that it's not contaminated soil for reuse. And so we're trying to determine if it's going to be best to have a notice of intent, maybe where we monitor that material coming in for a 90-day period and see as a pile for 90 days how that works, and maybe have some kind of a program where they could have reduced monitoring if everything looks good for the 90 days. They're hoping that they would be able to kind of spread out that material, any vegetation that's in that, kind of spread it out so it's not big clumps of grass. It's mostly dirt, but some of it is grass and things from just road projects. The other alternative would be to do what's called a solid waste permit modification. So they have the existing solid waste handling permit for the street sweepings and decant. It isn't a far stretch. I mean, this is material that's been coming into the site that they do process through that business activity. So we would just do a modification. So they would update their operations plan and we could just allow them to have the piles and give them parameters and just kind of hone that in. So that might be the direction we go. They will have to still be in compliance with air quality. They will still have to be in compliance with land use zoning. So it does would have to go through that just to make sure through that modification process that they meet all of the requirements. But I think thinking through the process, I think that's probably the cleanest is just to include it with their solid waste handling permit that they already have. And but again, we're still working. We really need to find out the data from ecology to see what we're looking at as far as what the material is, if it's contaminated or if it's clean soil.
Melissa, who at ecology and hazardous waste and toxins?
Kirsten. I don't know her last name.
I don't either.
Yeah, well, off the top of my head, I don't know her last name.
I'll follow up with you in an email.
Okay, and I know Derek Rocket, I've been working with him. He reached out to her just yesterday.
He's in my group too.
Yeah. So I know Derek.
I'm sorry, what location was that?
That's at the Watley Pit Decamp facility.
That's a privately owned facility?
Clark County Public Works owns and operates that. Yeah. So it's a Clark County owned entity.
Gotcha. And you have photos of that?
I do.
Can you share or?
Yes, I can share the PowerPoint.
Yeah.
I'll send it to Kim.
I'll send it to you.
I'll send it to Kim tomorrow.
Sounds good, thank you.
Uh-huh. And then just kind of a quick update. So we have some solid waste exempt facilities that we're still awaiting. Paper people, we're awaiting Department of Ecology. Their stormwater program needs to issue final approval. The applicant has requested extension upon extension upon extension upon extension. They're doing some moving and leasing of different parts of the business, which impacts their surface water permit application. So they were supposed to have something in by the 26th of April, but we're just waiting for final information from ecology. But for the most part, I don't foresee that being problematic to move forward. Earth Friendly Recycling, they need to have a tenant improvement permit through community development in order to meet that land use zoning. And then there are several other new potential sites. East County Materials, I got a notification from Jessica in the Sand and Gravel Program with Department of Ecology. They have piles of concrete and asphalt that may or may not fall under their existing sand and gravel permit. So we're going to be partnering with DNR early next week on that site. Hagenshaw is on my radar. I have received communication that they that one of our permitted facilities may or may not be utilizing them to crush concrete, where they would take concrete and asphalt from our permitted facility and
conversations about the possibility
of them utilizing their services. So if they are providing that service and accepting concrete and asphalt for crushing on their site, then they should be a solid waste facility. So I have that on my list to review with Derek Rocket from Ecology. And then also today we learned of a new location called Jay's Custom Landscaping, who is reportedly accepting organics material. I don't know if it's for the purpose of composting or the purpose of just accepting and reload. So I'm also planning to head out there with the Department of Ecology. And in my conversations with DNR, they said, oh yeah, we have a lot of sites that are land reclamation that have concrete and asphalt. Do you think all of those need to have these exemptions?
Well, that's one of the questions I was going to ask, because I mean, just in the last couple of days, that's come up a lot of different sites that are taking material and processing in some fashion.
Right. So
you know, where's the threshold? And then is it a,
sand and gravel.
Sand and gravel permit.
If it's included, sometimes it can be included in the sand and gravel. We just have to make sure that all of our agencies and all of the people are talking. So next Tuesday, Derek Rocket, myself, from Ecology, myself, Brian Massey with DNR, and also Jessica from Department of Ecology is also, we're all meeting together to try and figure out what our game plan is moving forward for these sites in Clark County.
I wonder if you have the status on the port side of the landfill, the deferral, are they able to
close up the old roof here?
Yeah, the old roof here, yeah.
So it's been a while since I've worked with them, and so this is down, I can't.
Across from the port offices?
Yeah, so, and it was an old paper waste landfill. And lagoon. Basically, there was a consent decree over that they had to finish. And we brought this to Swag Cash. I would say that was probably 2 years ago.
Right.
About their desire to get the consent decree closed so that they could, I guess, market the property. They were in the process of filling. They'd actually built on one part of the deal already. And so they were asking for us to tell a judge or through a hearing that the consent decree could be released, but we brought the SWAC, and if you read through the documents, there were some very specific things that they needed to keep that in place to make sure that it got filled all the way before they would be released from the consent decree. In the interim, they came to us, and I talked to our prosecuting attorney, and what we came up with was it was an agreement, I think it was through a covenant with them that it was actually a bond where they promised that they did not finish, and we just put the same stipulations that were in the consent decree, did not finish the filling, that they had followed a bond, made an estimate of what that would take, that would go to the county to finish that work if they couldn't finish it themselves. And so that was a separate non-consent decree instrument that allowed them to then show that there was not a consent decree hanging over this property that allowed them to market it. And so we substituted it with that. Our prosecuting attorney thought that was the right issue. We still have not heard from them. Once they satisfy the requirements, then we'll go to, I don't even know all the terms, but basically close that bond down and I guess determine that they've finished those requirements. But they haven't come to this.
I drove by like a month ago, and it seemed like it was almost filled.
Yeah, so I'd expect that we'll hopefully hear from them as soon as, because that, you know, I forget what the price tag now off the top of my head, but okay. It's a hefty amount, $300,000 scale kind of thing.
Good, yeah, that's a helpful explanation.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Yes, well, thank you. City of Vancouver, what are we doing?
I think when we met on February 7th, we were going to our city council with a new contract with Waste Connections. They approved that on February 25th. So April 1st, we have a new contract with Waste Connections that runs into 2030, I think. And a key part of that is the addition to our yard debris collection program of food scraps starting late September, early October timeline. So we're working with them now on details about that and reloading it and processing it. The dirt huggers, I think, is the plan. A few other pieces to that. Another key one, I think, and there'll be more, we'll probably have more details on it as we go forward, but another key one would be the contamination reduction plan that we'll be working on to address the contamination through sort of a ongoing tagging process to open cans and kind of give feedback to customers. The other piece, Tanya normally gives this report, but she didn't be doing that anymore. Sorry. She's moved over to the city's finance department. She's the new performance management analyst starting April 1st. So we are advertising for a solid waste supervisor and also a solid waste analyst for the next 2 weeks or so, I think. That's it.
Looks like you have lots of job opportunities in solid waste here.
Hey, we're shuffling all over the place,
right? That's a good thing, I guess. Okay, Derek.
So a couple things. We are finishing up wastewater treatment plant at the City of Vancouver. They replaced the incinerator at the facility. So we've spent the last basically 2 weeks hauling the solid sludge versus the ash variety down to West Van. And if anybody's been in that 2 mile radius, you've noticed the smell. But that ended yesterday, so that should be been in that building before with twins? Screaming twins? Yeah, that's fun. We did the recycling increase, so the recycling processing surcharge hit the bills. April 1st was the first time in the Clark County service areas. The City of Vancouver hit the bills on the March 1st billing. We received between 300 and 500 calls the first week, which is a significant amount, but we also sent out, 40 to 60,000 bills depending on the bill cycle, so on a percentage basis it's a pretty small quantity, but most of the customers, I did not receive any escalated phone calls. They were handled by, we kind of go through a process, but usually we get to a lead, we would kind of walk them through it, and then everything was fine, so we really didn't receive a whole lot of angry calls. I don't know if you guys got much on your end, so one. Yeah, so it seemed like things went fairly smoothly.
Two or three.
Yeah. But we did get a couple of comments, like, well, I'll just throw it away then, and that's their prerogative, certainly. We were at the Home and Garden Idea Fair this weekend, and we had a booth there. I was talking to Josie Wright, who's our education manager. She said they had about 900 visitors at our booth, and the bulk of the questions that they had were regarding recycling, which is good. A lot of people wanted to know why we wouldn't take all the kinds of recycling we took before, which was fascinating to hear because we didn't change anything. It's just that they are now getting educated about what they can and can't take. So I think it's working on a lot of different ways, kind of raising that awareness. So I think we're hoping it's successful. And then, as Rich mentioned, and I think Travis and Kim did as well, we will begin recruiting soon for a contamination reduction specialist. We're planning on hiring two of those individuals this summer and buying them a car and letting them go out. And the goal is, we've committed to the city, we'll touch half of the customer base, probably about the same in the county, and just do tagging, education on the street, and model a lot of the elements of the county program had been in the past and kind of carry that forward. So we're excited to see how that turns out. Let's see, Vancouver contract talked about, block phone. The only other thing is we didn't really talk about recycling theft. Kim has just thankfully organized the, what do we call it, the recycling?
Theft of Recyclables Task Force.
It needs a better acronym, so maybe yeah. I have any suggestions. We have received, ever since Oregon increased their redemption from 5 to 10 cents, there's been more activity. And that probably in confluence with the rate increase and more awareness about recycling, people have really become more vocal about their antipathy of people stealing their recyclables. So we actually were able to assist the Clark County Sheriff with apprehending a box van that was in the neighborhoods a couple weeks ago, and they were essentially driving around and just taking large swaths of recycling, throw them in the box van, and then run them down to Portland and redeem them. So we talked to the sheriff at that point. They said, well, we never know who to call at Waste Connections, and we gave them our card again and told them, you always just call us, and we're happy to do it. We don't seem to have as much problem in the City of Vancouver, but the Clark County Sheriff's Department had some struggles with it. We met with the graveyard sergeant and gave him all of our contact info, because that's when a lot of the theft goes on, in the middle of the night. So he has our full call roster. We just asked him not to call before 4 a.m. if possible. But they're going to be more proactive on this approach and then pursue charges against these individuals. And then we're going to meet as a group here next week, I believe it is?
Yeah, it is next week. So the Oregon Beverage Recycling
Coalition.
Corporation.
It's a C.
Corporation?
ORBC.
Yeah, OBRC. Yeah. They really, they've been reaching out to individually to our connections, to myself, to the city of Vancouver, to the sheriffs and the Vancouver police, and have kind of struggled making efforts. They really, they know that it's an issue that, you know, they've kind of created that has come over the river, and they want to be able to reach out into our community and find out where maybe there's targeted areas that they should reach out to and really put a lot of effort in. And so as such, through talking with them, we thought it'd be a good idea to just get all the stakeholders in one room and really have a conversation. You know, here's the problem, here's the data we need in order to move forward. Let's develop a strategy and then possibly start bringing in additional stakeholders, such as like Council for the Homeless and other groups, to try to figure out a solution that is the, you know, best path forward for our community, because there's a lot of different ways to look at this, as you could imagine. But as Derek was saying, we've gotten a lot of complaints, and I know the city of Vancouver has too, so it's kind of, and it's also gotten to our council at this point, and so it's kind of reached this level where we need to say something or do something. So I'm looking forward to it next week.
It reads the eye, it reads the call line of the office of the council, as we have councilors.
Okay.
Now the CTRAN put out some kind of a notice that they wouldn't let you take your great big bags of stuff across the bridge with the, you know, that's what they've been doing for a long, long time too. Mm-hmm. But yeah. By the way, speaking of, another thing that I did is I went out to Frenchman's Bar on the county cleanup of Frenchman's Bar, and that was well attended, and I never find it very dirty, but anyway, we do it about every month. And the young lady that runs the show out there said that when they bring the refuse that we collect to the county shops area, there is no glass recovery place for glass at the county shops. So that needs to be attended, because it should have a place to put the bottles and, you know, that are brought in. And she said they just go in the trash because there's no recycling program at the county shops. And I thought that was strange.
Get you a cart for free. Free service over there.
You're
if you
want
it. Or okay. Yeah.
Let me ask, what is the problem with that these people are picking up the recyclable material for Oregon, but a lot of the stuff comes from Oregon. You know, I mean, I think none of that. Okay, are they taking the containers too that the recyclers is in?
Yeah, so they're taking bottles and cans, and there's no way for the Oregon bottle system to decipher where the container was purchased.
Right.
So there's there, but that's all they're taking is that, and then they do take the bins on occasion. Yeah, we go through a pretty significant amount of more of the glass bins than we do any of our other systems.
Okay, okay, so that's part of the problem.
Yeah. It's very difficult for us, and we're not an enforcement agency, so it's really difficult for us. And we usually get the call, hey, there was a guy rifling through my recycling last night. Well, at that point, it's a little late in the day for us to do much. Sure. So we recommend they call the you know, the authorities on the issue. But a lot of the folks are also uncomfortable with you know, personal documents that might be in the recycling. That seems to be a big one too. So they're rifling through cans and bottles. At the same time, it might take something that they find of interest that might be personal in nature that they don't want. That's driving some of the calls. But in general, it's just a level of frustration. So
when this first started, Oregon cans were regular Coke cans or Pepsi cans, but Corwin used a blue tab, and those wouldn't work. But evidently, they've gone the other way. So there was a way at one time that they could tell that those cans never made it to. But now I suppose Corwin's selling Pepsi in Oregon too, so.
Yeah, we'll probably learn more next week and once we talk to the OBRC folks. And see.
Okay. Kind of give us a rundown of that meeting, would you, on that email?
Yeah, definitely.
Good. Okay. Anything else, Derek?
Nope.
Okay, good job. Legislative update.
So I'm going to give a quick rundown of the legislation is wrapping up in Olympia. Things are on its way to governor to sign or not signed. So I wanted to kind of run over a few highlights and celebrate a little victory that our SWAT group participated in. So bills that I do know have passed and are intended should be signed by the governor. They're either sitting on his desk or on their way there. I think the one that's worth mentioning first is the passing of the paint stewardship bill, which will develop a stewardship program for paint to manage and handle and mitigate paint waste, but to collect it and process it in a higher, and to steer that paint waste to a higher and better use than appropriately disposing of it in the landfill or burning it for fuel, but you know, repurposing it into tan or gray or various shades of bulk paint color that you can use for flipping houses. But yeah, so that'll set up a program. I don't know the exact timeline on that, when it's meant to kick in or take effect, but it'll put a small fee on paint that will then actually generate revenue for the state of Washington because they're taxing that fee, which I think is part of its success. But that passed, and I wanted to also thank this group, the support of the group, Warren spending time drafting a great letter that was distributed out to all of our legislators in the county that supported it, getting, I believe, do you end up signing it? I know that Amber and Kim worked very hard to get the letter distributed and get it signed, and I thank everybody that participated in that process. That was a bill that I kind of was, I think I thought, and people that actually knew what they were talking about also thought that it was maybe not going to move any further. But I'd like to think it was because of a last-minute push of voices, kind of moved that forward, but ultimately the bill that we... I'm going to say that this group revived it and sent it through, and that we're the reason it's on the governor's desk. So thank you guys very much.
Will Paint Care manage that program? Do you have any sense?
I don't know what all of the details are. I don't know ultimately what the end result is. So one of the benefits of that program is we spend about $30,000 a year of grant dollars on our current paint take-back program. So whenever this program starts, that will be a boon to our program. And the historically declined funds that we get from the Department of Ecology through the state. So between that and actually the fact that we're going to be passing some of the cost on of our foam program, we're actually going to be, which is funded through our local solid waste financial assistance grant, between this paint bill taking effect and subsidizing the block foam collection program, will actually be getting about $60,000 a year back, or about 14% of our overall grant back, for us to put towards some of our other projects and other priorities that are going to be coming based on some of the other legislation that I'll talk about. So additionally, there was a plastic packaging stewardship study. So they're going to study what a program would look like and what we would have to do to have a plastic packaging stewardship program by 2021. I think they're looking at the BC model as an example, the Vancouver, British Columbia model as an example. So the bill allowed for a study. So they're gonna be studying a plastic stewardship program. The other one that passed is it will establish a food waste goal of a 50% reduction by 2030. So I'm assuming that will look like ecology, putting requirements around food waste in our solid waste management plans. I don't know exactly what that'll look like, but I'm assuming that means that there will be a shift towards more efforts, or a requirement for more efforts to be put on reducing food waste and diverting food waste. I don't know if you have any other high-level thoughts.
I'm not sure how exactly that's going to take shape, but I know that ecology, my program, is tasked with turning some of that out. But I've been told it's going to model some of the existing goals, not efforts, but goals by Pacific Coast Collaborative, EPA, USDA. I'm not sure how that's going to take shape yet. But.
Yeah, I think a lot of these things, there's a lot of questions about what exactly it's going to look like, but in symbolism, they reflect priorities of the state to move in this direction. So another one was compostability labeling. So they're going to be putting together requirements on whether or not something that is labeled as compostable or biodegradable is truly compostable or biodegradable. So they will be establishing stricter definitions for what that means and enforcing what those terms mean, which I assume can only mean good things to help out with our composting program, since a lot of that contamination is the assumption that things are compostable or biodegradable, and what that actually means compared to how fast our food waste and yard debris composts. As well as the Department of Ecology will be tasked with developing a sustainable recycling research center, which will be working on developing contamination reduction plans, new markets, really just helping statewide boost the recycling program opportunities here and kind of keep our programs, if just status quo, improve opportunities to process things locally and clean up our waste. So, two or a couple that have died or did not make it through are the plastic bag ban or the requirements on single-use plastic bags from retailers, so that is not happening. There was also a right to repair bill for electronics, which I did not pay a whole lot of attention to, but I think it had to do with the manufacturing of electronics and making them less designed for obsolescence and more designed for repair and maintenance and longer life. That did not pass, nor did the plastic straws, which by the time it went up for vote, it was just that they had to keep straws behind the counter and people would request them, but that is no longer going to be a bill that anybody's going to talk about until maybe next year. So the other big one that our program had been watching and that we had put a lot of effort behind was trying to get more money for the local solid waste financial assistance. So I've talked to you about this to quite a bit of an extent, but just a quick summary, that's the portion of the money from gas taxes that get passed through to manage solid waste programs and clean up stormwater pollution. I'm not saying that right, but...
I was thinking more contaminated sites.
Yeah, it's contaminated sites, so a lot of cleanup.
It's the cellotoxics in the city, which is largely important.
So it's a fund called MODCA. It's a Model Toxics Control Accounts. It funds a lot of the work that we do. It funds a lot of the work that Melissa and the enforcement programs do. It funds a lot of those programs across the state. It had been as high as about $28 million and had gone down year over year about 50%. Last cycle, it was at $10 million statewide, which this group went forward and got a tipping fee to kind of make up for some of those losses. So about the time I was starting, there was a $1.43 tip fee that was put in place. So the bill just passed, and after all of the work, including myself and Kim, going up to lobbying, extensive letter writing and extensive meetings and work around trying to support this, it's exactly where it was last time. So we are going to be funded at exactly the same level we were funded at the last biennium, so the last cycle. So what that means for us is that we will be able to continue offering our services and programs. We will find efficiencies like block foam and lean on the efficiencies that hopefully a paint stewardship program will build to find more opportunities to grow programs and do targeted projects around waste that we need to target. And then we'll continue to work on trying to see if there are efforts to increase funding in the future. We have the benefit of that $1.43. What it means for other counties, especially the smaller counties, and especially a lot of the eastern Washington counties, is that they will continue to not have the resources they need to offer the programs in their communities that we offer, including just recycling programs, collection programs, composting programs, especially around hazardous waste programs. Yeah.
What were your main oppositions that you heard from funding what you were wanting from the legislator?
Well, I'd say the main opposition was that the goal around MODCA, so it was a tax based upon the price of gasoline. Mm-hmm. The proposal in order to increase the funds was it was to base it on volume rather than value. So it would basically create a higher tax on gasoline. So it would have increased, I don't know the exact amount at the end of the day. So that was the main opposition, was that this is a tax increase on services. The other is that it did short some other programs that had over the years, one of the reasons our funding had gone down was because other programs that were suffering, were borrowing or using, were moved into this program. And so that effectively meant some of those programs were going to get moved out of that funding or might not have this reliable funding or might have to go back to previously insufficient funding. And at the end of the day, I think the reason there's a whole lot of gamesmanship that happened. I'm still trying to figure out exactly what happened. But at the very last minute, the $50 million of the MATCA money was shifted over to the Department of to WashDOT, so the Department of Transportation. I don't know exactly for what yet, but that was the very last minute. And the amount went from $0 funding all the way up to $28 million and everywhere in between. And then when the budget came out, it was a very shocking 10. So it was really surprising to see it end exactly where it had been after very contentious and very intense conversations. So we'll be able to continue to do our work. We will not be suffering due to this one. We will not be lowering our tip fee back down to where it was, but we'll continue to find efficiencies. That's my legislative update. We had started down the path of having a legislative subcommittee, basically somebody that would be willing to participate in these conversations and bring recommendations or conversations back to the SWAC. I would like to do that again. We would start earlier, obviously, due to turnover. The people that took on that role ended up having to leave. But I appreciate the email conversation. I appreciate Warren stepping up to draft the letter. I appreciate our program, Kim and Amber working on getting that out. But I would like to do that again, and if anybody would be more interested in that, including, potentially lobbying efforts and going up and having, 20 meetings with 20 different legislators in a day. You get free lunch and we'll drive you up there and back. But it was a very interesting opportunity. So we'll try a little bit sooner. We'll try to get started a little bit sooner in the next cycle. But it was a great conversation, and I think this was a good model for what it looks like to take something to council as well as get approval from council for us to draft a letter and send something up there. So that is my legislative update, unless there are questions. And I can send out a link with many more details if anybody's more interested in reading any of the things that did or did not pass. So.
What was the year on the food waste reduction, the goal?
It was by 2030, and it's based on 2017 numbers. And it's just a food waste reduction, and I don't know if that means, if I'm assuming diversion is included in there, or if it's solely an upstream reduction, or I don't know what all they're classifying as a food waste, as reduction. Those are my legislative updates.
Any other questions? Okay. Upcoming opportunities, anything?
I've got one. Had great participation in a couple of the projects so far. As I mentioned, Warren participated in the letter writing. Tim is participating. Tim Kraft, who's not here, participated in selecting the consulting firm that will be doing our regional system study. And I want to kind of find more opportunities for, the SWAC represents, you're here to be the voice of the groups that you represent, but also to represent all of the folks at the table. So finding more opportunities to participate in key moments and projects to make sure that we're going and getting steered in the right direction and taking your advice. So one of the things that is coming up soon that I'm actually working on getting a facilitator for is, I haven't come up with a clever name for it. I don't want to call it a task force. We have enough task force, plus those sound a little militaristic, so maybe we need to work on a name. But really, the goal will be to get a team of stakeholders, including our program staff, City of Vancouver, Waste Connections, our council's liaison, some of the enforcement program staff, the site hazardous assessments, and the pollution prevention folks. Or no, sorry, I'm crossing projects over. Forget not the enforcement staff. I'm sorry, Melissa. I'm not inviting you to this one, but a future one. But really the goal will be to lead program staff and external stakeholders to create a clear problem statement around food waste and wasted food and its impact on Clark County, our values related to acting on the problem that we frame as it exists, and what goals we intend to and not pursue as a program, and then facilitate towards a prioritized set of actions for accomplishing those goals broken down by program. So, all right, these are our goals, these are our priorities, here's the problem. Now, how does that look in each of our solid waste programs? How does that look in Green Neighbors versus how does that look in operations versus how does that look in, Green Business and Green Schools? So who's going to be doing what? And then that last piece kind of ties into Rich and his talk. You know, he mentioned that the curbside food scraps program will be rolling out in October, and one of the things we need is a cohesive regional voice and communication strategy to be used when we talk about these things. So if the city is going to be rolling out a curbside composting program, everybody needs to be able to speak the same talking points or the same concept to our electeds, to our residents, around why or why not these programs are existing and what we are doing. Because we want to make sure that the City of Vancouver's program has the greatest amount of success, but we really want to test ourselves to see if we have some capacity limitations right now. So the county will not be rolling out a curbside program, but we will be evaluating when we would be interested in doing something like that. So what this will look like is I'm bringing on a consultant, somebody that's a facilitation expert, to kind of put everybody on an even status level so that we create an atmosphere where everybody gets to share their input and their values. So there will be a one-on-one interview process that will happen, I think, and then a series of report outs and a couple of meetings between during the month of May, June, and July to kind of steer us towards those deliverables. And again, that goal is to develop communication and plans around food and what we're going to be doing about it in the county. And also just as important as what we're not going to be doing about it and why, so that we can anchor ourselves to a set of values and priorities and actions. And that'll start steering us towards some of these food waste goals by 50/50 or by 2030. You know, we're steering towards what that work looks like. This is something that the group will talk about. How do we achieve that in our county? Is it upstream? Is it downstream? And how? So I don't want to ask for volunteers right now, especially since we're still recruiting and not everybody's here. But there might be an opportunity for one or two. There will be an opportunity for one or two members of SWAC to participate in, at the very least, the interviewing process, knowing that you all have your other things going on, but to kind of determine the level. But I would ask that, at least from your representation of the group that you are here to speak for, to participate in some of those interviews so that we really get a sense of what the community is looking for and how the community understands our program and what they think we should be doing. So that's a whole lot of talking about a food waste project. I'll send out more details once we get closer, but that was it. So that's really the main opportunity right now, I think. And then we may have asked SWAC to go out and hunt down people that are stealing bottles of cans too. So.
And you feel Dirt Hugger able to do all this food processing for us, huh?
We know for sure that they are going to be capable of doing the City of Vancouver's. So they're doing a large expansion out there, like from your last interview. And when we talked to him, you know, we would definitely make sure we would go back and do our due diligence. We wouldn't rely on something that was said now. But mostly there's other barriers in the way here right now about transfer capacity, and we're going to figure those out. So we just want to make sure that, you know, we roll it out. Whatever rolls out is done so with a plan in mind, and that it adheres to what we want to do. So.
Anything else for the good of the group? Anything from the assemblage in the back? Questions? Okay.
And I do want to, this is Greg Gahowski with the Department of Ecology, and he is our grant officer, liaison.
I represent grants for six counties in Southwest Washington, managing both sides of the grant. I say both sides, the enforcement side as well as the implementation side. And then when you start rolling up your sleeves to do the solid waste management plan update, I'm also the person who will be reviewing that, both the prelim and the final versions, but also lending assistance along the way, so we'll get to know each other real well.
Real well.
Real well.
Because I think, all of you that signed up, because when we start doing the solid waste management plan, we have to meet monthly, so.
Yeah, that was a biggie. What year did we do that?
15.
You did it in 15. We will start close towards the end of the regional system study, so probably start updating it in 2020.
I remember that wasn't a lot of fun.
But a little bit different. We'll figure out a way to make it.
It's going to be super
fun-ish this time.
Circus animals, maybe.
More circus animals.
More.
Sweet.
Yeah, going through a new approach with Cowles County. I'll let you know how it works now.
With circus animals?
Just the overall magic show and everything else that's going on. But
we're meeting every other week right now. Hopefully we could borrow some of their good ideas.
Yeah.
Okay, well then our next meeting is in August, so we got quite a summer ahead of us. And appreciate your attendance and interest. And it's now 7:30, so we're half hour ahead of schedule, which is always good.